Much of the book of Joel is about a terrible plague caused by locusts that lead to the starvation of animals and the people of Israel. It paints images where there are no pastures for the animals, the cattle groan, and the sheep walk around in that daze you get when one hasn't eaten in a while. The crops in the field are withered and ruined from no rain. Fires appear to be everywhere, and all things seem destroyed. And then, last but not least, there are the people. They are in anguish, the book says, and their faces grow more pale by each verse. To top it all off, Joel, this prophet, has a nerve to suggest that the people have brought this upon themselves. They have turned away from God, and now God is punishing them. It is such a dark text, and it doesn't feel very good to read. It certainly doesn't reflect the God so many of us know in Jesus. And it certainly does not seem like an appropriate text for Thanksgiving, a time when we celebrate with friends and family, a time when we feast alongside people we love, either together or, in today's continuing pandemic, distantly and through the wonders of technology. It's a time when we give thanks for all that we have. As my mind pondered what I can only call a disturbing book, I came to realize we are not so different from the people in the book of Joel. A couple of weeks ago, I sat with my family at the bedside of my dying Nana. Having practiced as an LPN for over 20 years and having much experience with the journey toward end of life, I felt quite certain what to expect and how her death would likely play out. But she hung on for a couple days longer than even I and the doctors anticipated. My mom, in her anguish and heartbreak, cried out, "How can she continue to hold on?" This was her question of wonder in the midst of deep, deep sorrow and suffering. No, we aren't so different from the people in the book of Joel, because Joel raises that very poignant question that so many of us ask. Where is God in all of this? In the midst of what is chaos, destruction, and profound worry for the people, Joel proclaims God's response and promise, the promise of restoration. The theme of worry, response, and promise is reflected throughout our biblical texts, including in the words of Jesus. In our gospel reading for today, there's one word that gets repeated over and over again, the word worry. Many of us have become compulsive worriers, including myself, and the habits of a lifetime are hard to break. Jesus saying, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life," sounds an awful lot like an eccentric pipe dream. But I think it is wise to recognize that in this, as in every other instance, Jesus practiced what he preached. He does not seem to have been a person who worried a great deal. He lived his life on the principle of trusting in God's abundant grace and constant outpouring of love. I wonder, though, what the disciples said, may have, sorry, I wonder though what the disciples would have said to Jesus when he told them not to worry. I can almost hear them thinking, don't tell us not to worry. We've given up everything to follow you. We haven't been home in months, and most of the time, we don't even know where our next meal is coming from. Jesus was saying to the disciples, and indeed to us today, to hold on to faith and put aside our worry, no matter how thin the shreds of grace may be perceived. It is these shreds that the prophet Joel clings as well in his own hard time, holding on to the promise that God is not finished, that there is justice coming, however long delayed. The promise that we will be given back the years which the locusts have eaten, all the years lost to grief or fear or hunger, to the mistakes or the cruelties of power or the terrors of chance. Somehow we will be redeemed. Do not fear, says the prophet to the much abused earth. The rain will come and restore your life. The presence of God will come like rain. We, as a community of hope and faith, we hold that promise and we hang on. In the times of cruelty and malice, in the times of violence against the weak, in the times of hunger and grief, when powerful entities mock the underserved, the addicted, and the marginalized, we hold on to God's promise of restoration. Even if we cannot know in the moment, we are held. We are cherished. We matter. So we take that love and try to bring it into the world in our small acts of kindness and our resilient acts of protest towards injustice. And in all that, even with the worry and the concerns of daily survival, we will, as Jesus tells us, be more alive, more human, and more true, if we can also embrace the strength from the birds and the lilies. And so we offer our complicated thanks to God. We offer our wearied, troubled, and worried thanks to God still for the assurance that we are loved and that we are on a journey of healing. We give our thanks for the earth, and which even in its damage still abides, for its persistence and its stubborn astonishments. We give thanks that we are still here to fight for justice, to mourn for the lost, and to love each other. And when we can't find it in ourselves, we can be held within community by the people who give thanks on our behalf and even offer thanks because we are here with them. Friends, we all worry. We are human and we are mysteries to ourselves and to each other. But when we depart from here today, go in the sure knowledge that we are all deeply, deeply loved by God, the God who continues to abide within and without our lives and promises us restoration and new life. Happy Thanksgiving. Amen.